This is an ABC podcast.
In 2013, Dr. Mark Post unveiled the world's first lab-grown hamburger. It was a beef patty made entirely from bovine stem cells. Now, you might remember that that first hamburger was not cheap. It cost around $350,000 to make. And 8 years on, we still don't have cell-based meat available in our supermarkets. So what has changed for those involved in cellular agriculture? To look at some of the highlights for this sector in 2021, I spoke to Dr. Bianca Lee from Cellular Agriculture Australia and asked for her summary of the year that was.
Yeah, it's been quite hard to keep up because there's just been so much activity all over the world in this space. And cellular agriculture encompasses many products, not just cultured meat or cell-based milk. It's also eggs. It's also leather. It's coffee. It's basically any product that can be produced using cells. And so we're seeing from academia, from research, from the private industry, there's just a lot more interest and enthusiasm and breakthroughs that has happened this year, despite everything that's happened with the pandemic.
Now, Bianca, I have asked for your top five moments of 2021 when it comes to cellular agriculture. And for me, what sticks out is some of the products emerging when it comes to cell-based milk. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so cell-based milk is produced using a technology called precision fermentation, which basically means we can use any kind of microbe like a yeast cell that produces animal proteins. In the case of milk, we have two key proteins called casein and whey that gives milk that distinct mouthfeel and fatty texture. And so this precision fermentation can produce dairy milk without the dairy cow. And one particular company based in the US, they're called Perfect Day. They've managed to produce their cell-based milk to scale so that they can now sell it at Starbucks. And that's a really big deal because a lot of these companies are starting to sell their products, you know, in small batch on supermarket shelves or for smaller local restaurants. But Starbucks is one of the largest food and beverage chains in the US. So it's a huge accomplishment for them.
Does that milk cost more?
At the moment, yes, only because the field is so new, the company itself is new, and they are not producing it to the same scale that we produce dairy milk. So we suspect that over the next few years, that price will just continue to go down and down.
But right now, at Starbucks in America, you could buy a coffee with cell-based milk in it.
That's right.
Wow.
So all the same texture and flavor that you'd expect with dairy milk. However, it is made without any animals at all.
And would still be classed and different to, say, almond milk or soy milk, which is essentially flavored water. It's actually got little to do with milk, hasn't it? Those type of.
That's right. Yeah. They don't taste the same as dairy milk. You still get that oat flavor, that almond flavor, which not a lot of consumers want. So, you know, if you're trying to reduce your intake of animal products, whether it's for health reasons, for environmental reasons, animal welfare reasons, you can get that exact same taste at Starbucks.
And for our audience, in case they're thinking, oh, this is something that's happening way overseas in America, tell us about All G Foods and the investment that's been made this year from the Australian government.
Yeah, so All G Foods are a company based in Sydney, and they are producing a wide range of food products, including plant-based meats. But they're also now investing in this cellular agriculture space where they're using precision fermentation to produce that same cow-free dairy milk. Now, a lot of these companies are backed by private investors and VC firms, but All G are the first company in Australia to be backed by the Australian government. So the Australian government have a fund called the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, and they have backed All G Foods with about $5 million to produce this dairy milk using precision fermentation.
And when is that company hoping to push product into the market?
So the technology is still quite new in Australia. There are a few researchers getting more involved to ensure that, you know, this technology works, it's safe, and that it can be scaled to commercial production. So we don't actually know when their products will be available on supermarket shelves, but, you know, the fact that this happened in October this year just goes to show that there is a lot more enthusiasm and support coming from the Australian federal government.
If you're tuning in, this is The Country Hour, and we're speaking to Bianca Lee, who is from Cellular Agriculture Australia, and we're taking a look at the year that was for cellular ag, not just in Australia, but around the world. Bianca, we've been talking about cell-based milk. What about the big one that always captures headlines, the idea of cell-based meat? How close is that at the moment?
Yeah, so it's kind of, again, quite hard to know when we're going to get these products in Australia. But Singapore is one country that's really leading the space. Last year, they released a cultured meat chicken nugget that is now available at one restaurant. And just this year, they gave the approval to a large manufacturing plant called Esco Asta to produce cultured meat to scale. Again, that's a really big deal because a lot of these companies are producing their products at the pilot level, and, you know, that just makes the product slightly more expensive than the conventional animal-based products. But the fact that Singapore is putting a lot of investment and infrastructure and people into this field just means that we're getting closer to having these products on our supermarket shelves as well.
And the Singaporean government's putting a lot of legislation in place as well, yes, in that
That's right. Some
of these products probably couldn't be allowed to be made and consumed in Australia yet. Is that still correct?
That's correct. They're the only country in the world to have regulated these products. And that's mostly because the companies themselves aren't ready to produce their products for consumers. It's a very new research field. I mean, the term cellular agriculture was coined in 2016. So over the next few years, we'll see more countries getting involved. And we do know that in Australia, in the US, parts of Europe, their food regulation agencies are already discussing about how we can regulate these products with the companies themselves. And of course, Singapore is a tiny island. They import the majority of their food. So investing in a new food technology like cellular agriculture allows them to strengthen their economy and future-proof their food system.
It's new food, it's new technology, it's all new. And when I asked for your top five moments of the year, you've mentioned here that one of the top universities in Asia has now got a course. You can go off and study this sector, can
you? That's right. Yeah. So the field is mostly made up of startups and private companies. You know, a couple of founders plus a few professors and academics. But now that the field is growing so quickly and there are new pilot plants and manufacturing facilities available, we need more people getting involved. And so Nanyang Technological University in Singapore has produced the first undergraduate university course dedicated to food science using cellular agriculture. And as I am the director of Cellular Agriculture Australia, I'm constantly talking to students who are really keen to get involved, but they don't know how. And that is purely because there aren't existing courses or pathways to train this next workforce to get into the field. So I'm personally excited about this piece of news, which came out in June, about, you know, a way for students to actively get involved and learn about this new technology.
What sort of people is this sector attracting? Like even yourself, Bianca, how do you end up in the cellular agriculture field?
Yeah, so I've been in biomedical research my whole career. I studied cell biology to understand the human body and how we can use science and technology to ensure that humans are as healthy as possible. And I didn't realize in my undergraduate years that I could apply all of that expertise to food. You know, you'd assume that your career is dedicated to medicine and biomedical research, but I didn't realize that I could use all of my learnings at university to solve many more issues like climate change and fixing our food system and solving antimicrobial resistance, all of these, you know, major challenges that are associated with our current food system. So you see the same across all these other students and academics and entrepreneurs in the space. They want to get involved with this exciting new technology to ensure that our future is resilient and we can climate-proof the way we eat food.
And finally, in your top five moments for the year, Bianca, you've got here the US Department of Ag has funded the first ever National Institute for Cellular Agriculture Research.
Yes, that has been by far the most exciting news of the year. As I mentioned before, the majority of this field is funded and backed by altruistic philanthropists and venture capitalists. This is the first time the government in the US has funded a multidisciplinary research center that brings in so many different experts across cell biology, meat science, food safety, engineering, regulation, policy, all of these various fields of research together to ensure that we can produce these products to scale in the most effective, sustainable way possible.
And finally, you'd be aware of the Senate inquiry into the definitions of meat that's happening in Australia. What do you expect? What are you expecting from that?
Yeah, so right now a lot of the conversation revolves around plant-based meats, which is very different to cultured meat. And so I suspect that we will learn a lot from the conversations happening across all the different stakeholders. So yes, we want to include farmers, we want to include food technologists, researchers, consumers, to understand how we can ensure that these products are labelled in the most accurate way possible. And, you know, there are a lot of similar conversations happening in the US, in Singapore, in France, and no one here wants to confuse consumers. We just want to ensure that everyone has proper labeling and these products are available to as many people as possible.
I really appreciate your time on the Country Hour today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Matt. It was a pleasure.